the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. And today we have in the studio with us a very special guest, Mr. Justin Ferguson from the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation. How you doing, Justin?
Hey, Jason. Hey, Bobby. Doing great. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, thanks for coming, man. It's good to see you.
So, Justin, when a lot of people out there in the world think of Farm Bureau, they think of the Southern Casualty Insurance. That's not quite what you do, is it?
That's right. That's exactly right. It's very two different organizations, sort of one, you know, one big family, but multiple pieces of the family.
So what is your role with the Federation?
Yeah, so just to back up just a little bit, Bobby, we Farm Bureau was started in 1922, and it was actually a product of the startup of the Extension Service here in Mississippi, believe it or not. So you know, we are tied with Extension and value the relationship that we have with MSU Extension Service. We're sort of parent and child, if you really think about it from that perspective. And you know, we work closely, and I'll say this, you know, the crop team that you guys have put together, and you two here, as well as our other extension specialist on campus and here at DREC, our growers have a real tremendous asset that they don't understand that we have here in Mississippi that other states don't. We travel the country, and the relationship that Farm Bureau and the grower community and Extension has here in Mississippi is really a unique thing. When you get outside the Southeast, you just don't have that connection. The farmers don't know to call or have an opportunity to call a crop specialist within their respective commodities. So first and foremost, I want to say thank you to you guys for what you do. Thank you for the leadership at Mississippi State for putting that team together. And thank you guys for working together as a team, because you really are. And the growers in our state really, I think, really don't understand what asset we truly have here in Mississippi. So thanks for that.
Well, we sincerely appreciate that, man.
Well, thank you, Justin. We'll take all the kind words we can get. And I know we do it because we want to help these guys out. I know that's why I do it, and I know that's why Jason does it as well.
Oh, without question. Just on the Farm Bureau, this is just something I thought about. So you said that the Mississippi Farm Bureau was organized in the 20s. So I know there's American Farm Bureau Federation, and I assume Mississippi Farm Bureau is a component of that. So was there a national organization, and then the state organizations were organized, or were there some organizations similar to that, and then they were organized into a collective American Farm Bureau?
Yeah, I think the state efforts kind of began first, Jason, and then they sort of formed the American Farm Bureau out of that, you know, that movement per se. And just a, you know, reminder, we have the way our structure works, we have a county farm bureau. So each county farm bureau has, you know, a local board of directors made up of farmers and ranchers, and then they jump up, and the next level is the state organization, who is, you know, obviously who I work for, the Mississippi Farm Bureau, and then the American. And so when you walk in and you join, you know, Washington County or Bolivar County Farm Bureau, and you pay that annual membership fee, which is, you know, anywhere from $35 to $45 a year, depending upon the county, you're actually a member of all three groups. There's a certain portion of that dollar amount of that dues that's broken down into county, state, and the national group. So if you're a member of here in Washington County, you're a member of the American Farm Bureau as well. So,
Justin, you know, Bobby mentioned the insurance component of Farm Bureau. So when a non-agriculture, you know, a person that's not involved in the agriculture industry, if they choose to purchase their, you know, car insurance through Farm Bureau, they pay dues that you referred to a minute ago. So what benefit does that non-agriculture involved citizen get by paying dues to the Farm Bureau?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jason. And we have sort of two broad categories of Farm Bureau membership. We have an active class, which is, you know, all of our farmers and ranchers, the folks that have, you know, some tie to agriculture, or somebody that sells a commodity. And then you have what we have called associate members. And those are the folks that come in that would like to purchase, you know, like you said, car insurance. But before you do that, you have to become a member of the Farm Bureau. And going back to our history, you know, in the 40s, to tell you a little bit about the insurance part from a historical perspective to get to your point, back in the 40s, you know, there was no rural fire protection out in the counties where these farms were at. So out of, you know, the Farm Bureau collectively, sort of that collective approach, cooperative sort of model, they created an insurance company because the large underwriters out in, you know, in town would not, and, you know, in cities would not write coverage because of the no fire protection issue. So you got that whole pool of risk concept that comes into play. So now, you know, we still operate as a general farm organization with 192,000 members, but a large portion of those members are folks that come in that see the benefit of what we do and purchase, you know, the insurance for, you know, for that membership. Now, what we do offer them as, you know, a benefit to them, as, you know, somebody that's not tied to agriculture, we have a large, very large set of member benefits that are apply to everybody that's a member, whether you're a farmer or whether you're not. You know, one of the big ones is the Ford discount. If you go in and you buy a new Ford vehicle, we have a member benefit of $500 off right off the top of your best negotiated price with Ford. Very successful program. We have a lot of discounts with hotels. If you book a room at any Comfort or Quality Inn or several others, there's a 10 to 20% discount right off the top if you're a Farm Bureau member. So now we offer a lot of things like that. And there's a long, long list of other discounts, you know, opportunities that a Farm Bureau member gets treated differently if you're not a member. So.
All right, Justin. So you've talked a lot about what Farm Bureau does for their people and members. What do you do for Farm Bureau?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the three things we do at Farm Bureau, I consider our three major strategic, you know, activities. A is legislative and regulatory. B is ag promotion. A lot of y'all are familiar with the Farm Families of Mississippi program. That's something that
Great program that we
birthed out of Farm Bureau. That's kind of that big flagship program that we operate. And three is leadership development, our young farmer programs that y'all have both been a part of. But going back to A, so what I work in policy and regulatory. So what I specifically do is I am our sort of my title is National Affairs Coordinator, so which means anything related to federal legislation or federal regulation, that's the world I live in. So obviously, you know, trade, farm bill, tax-related issues, that's sort of the my job is to keep up with those issues, find out what our members, you know, what issues that pop up, and be that communication channel between our organization and our congressional delegation in Washington, as well as, you know, any federal agency that we work with, whether it's EPA or USDA.
Awesome. So in your role, and there's been a lot of moving and shaking going on the last couple of years in Washington, right now, you know, farm bill issues, where are we at?
Yeah, good question. We had our first back-to-school staff meeting, if you will, yesterday, and looking, our president, Mike McCormick, kind of walked through kind of a review of 2018 of some of the things that we've worked on and talked to a lot of the staff that don't really hear that every day sometimes. And so it was really eye-opening looking back at some of the things that have gone on in 2018. So, you know, obviously – finishing this farm bill on time was monumental. I think in the last four or five farm bills, there's either been a 1 year delay or, you know, some continual, you know, legislation to keep it. Congress, you know, rarely.
Some breakdown somewhere couldn't finish it.
Absolutely. So there's always been a stopgap sort of program. But Congress came in back after the midterms and obviously, you know, had some changes in party leadership within the House. The House is going to be in democratically controlled there. The Senate will the Republican Party will remain in leadership there. And, you know, we had no idea what was going to happen after midterms. But somewhere around December 10th or 12th, Chairman Mike Conaway in the House, his ranking member, Colin Peterson, as well as Pat Roberts and Debbie Stabenow in the Senate, came out of a room and said, we got a deal. And, basically, the Senate had to go through a few formalities to get a vote on it. The conference report was signed by all the members of the House and Senate that were on the conference committee. It went back to each chamber and passed overwhelmingly, a record vote in the House, believe it or not. The bill itself is really good for Mississippi. There are some really key things, especially when you look at row crops that were huge wins. Cotton back into the farm bill, back into the commodity title, was absolutely monumental. As y'all remember, the 2014 bill, the cotton industry took a different approach, and they opted for sort of a crop insurance type program called Stacks. And, a lot of folks feel
a lot
like
of debate out there on how that worked out.
Right,
for them.
Right. A lot of debate, you know, how good it was or not. The cotton industry collectively came back in the spring of this year and got cotton back into the commodity title through the appropriation process, thanks to Chairman Conaway from Texas in the House and our very own Thad Cochran in the Senate, who was chair of appropriations at the time. So getting cotton back in was huge. The PLC and ART programs continue. They made some really good enhancements on those, one being reference prices have the ability to go up depending on the market, as well as a year-to-year election. The old programs in the 2014 bill, you were locked in for 5 years if you chose to put your beans in PLC. This go-round with this farm bill, you will have a year-to-year option.
That is great. That is really good.
Of what to put your crop in. Two other things I'll mention, the adjusted gross income, a lot of the means testing programs, the AGI is left at 900,000 unchanged. The rules in regard to actively engaged are unchanged from the 2014 bill. Senator Grassley, who is the senior senator from Iowa, has always been a real challenge for Southern agriculture. He got an amendment added into the Senate bill. Fortunately, that provision did not make it out of conference. So from the AGI perspective and means testing perspective, good news, no changes from the 2014 bill.
That's really good. Nothing got snuck in there on you.
Nothing got whacked. That's right. CSP and EQIP are still separate programs. So many of the conservation programs that our folks here rely upon. And some of our Mississippi senators were very successful in getting some key things in. Senator Wicker has worked really hard on the issue of rural broadband. And so he was able to get a standalone bill that he authored called the Precision Ag Act. He was able to get those provisions put into the farm bill. And what it does is create a task force between the FCC and USDA to basically further broadband development in regard to precision ag applications.
And I think that's going to be huge. Where we're going with ag and where we're going with all the technology. You know, I was talking to my dad the other day, and he's like, still don't have internet at the house because they don't run it out this far.
Yeah.
And who's wanting dial-up in 2018?
Yeah. Well, and think about the trickle-down that has.
2019, I still hadn't turned the page.
With labor situations and logistics and where we're going, like you said, Bobby, what the next 10 years holds just with equipment set up, that's going to be, if we can improve that network, that's going to be a big boon for us.
Absolutely. And our one last thing to mention as far as Mississippi activities, our very own Senator Highsmith was also, she's on the Ag Committee. She was also successful in getting some Mississippi-specific language in. A lot of the farmers down in southwest Mississippi fight the river every year. They farm a lot of the bachelor lands. And one thing that we work really hard to get in to the bill, which she was key in making that possible, was asking RMA to come in, the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation, to come in and look at that problem and see if there is a product that those farmers can utilize through RMA to help with that. Because, last over the last 20 years, the floods.
It's been tough on those guys.
It's been tough. And, you know, in the last 5 years, it's been more frequent and more severe. And, you know, whether, you know,
when you look at where we stand today.
Right.
And the river's coming up, and when's it going to stop?
Who or what is to blame for that? You know, I don't know. But we were able to get RMA to conduct a study. And so they'll try to work up a pilot program to figure out a way to get those guys insured and to give them some reasonable leg to stand on to fight the river from year to year.
Do you think there was, Justin, you know, for the folks listening, who is the – was there one catalyst for getting that bill passed? I mean, the entire farm bill passed. I mean, who –
Yeah, with all the gridlock in Washington right now,
who should we thank for making that happen?
How did we get this thing through?
I know it's a collective effort, but somebody had to be the
absolutely. So the four principals, those four folks I mentioned earlier, they were gridlocked mostly on one issue, and it was primarily SNAP. Okay, so the House, which when they passed the bill was controlled by Republican Party, they wanted to make some reforms to SNAP. You know, make some changes, tighten work eligibility requirements on SNAP. And long story short, Chairman Conaway was able to work out a deal with the USDA and backed away from some of those tight restrictions to get a bill done. And so when that happened is when things kind of fell into place, is where that was the primary hold with changes in SNAP. And as most of y'all know, Farm Bill is about, you know, it's about 75% SNAP. And a guy named Jamie Whitten from Mississippi was the one that married those two programs back in the 70s. And, you know, because what that does, that brings in an urban member of Congress who has no interest in agriculture. It brings them to the table to talk about, you know, the low-income, you know, constituency they have and the importance of, you know, food and
agriculture
nutrition.
Is a food crop,
right? And the food and nutrition programs for them. So, that's been farm policy. And you know, when you have an urban member of Congress that doesn't have an acre of soybeans in their district, what is the farm bill for them? Well, the farm bill is providing support for some of the folks in their district. So,
all right. So you talked a little bit a while ago about the river and water. I know one of the big issues that we've been fighting the last several years is the waters of the U.S. So can you give us an update on where we're at on that?
Absolutely, Bobby. That's a great question. That was one of the things here on my list to mention. As you know, 2015 EPA and the Corps rolled out a very egregious water rule that was going to essentially make every standing body of water a water of the U.S., which would hence provide EPA and the Corps the ability to regulate
your backyard ditch,
the mud hole in the driveway in your front yard. You know, so what we saw, and again, December was a big month. We were my boss and I were in town at meetings at American Farm Bureau while the Farm Bill was passed, and the day before EPA announced a rewrite to that WOTUS rule of the 2015 provisions. We're going through the process of analyzing those, but with the new rule, we're very excited that they've basically ditched the rule, which was a campaign that we had. That American Farm Bureau started. So they got a new rule put out. You know, there'll be a process for comment and that whole formal system, but we're very excited. It's much, much more reasonable for farmers and ranchers across the U.S.
So you think the new rule is something that we can live with?
Absolutely, yep.
Excellent, excellent.
Much, much, much better.
All right, so we're pushing a limit here. We generally try to keep these things to the majority of Americans commute home. So before we get off here, is there any last thing that you need to get out to general public about what Farm Bureau is doing for their members?
We just thank y'all again, Jason and Bobby, for having me on. Farm Bureau is a great organization. One thing that my boss always says is, you know, we go to the Capitol in Jackson and go to the Capitol in Washington. And one of the members of Congress and the members of the House and Senate here say, there's one group in the state that looks out for all rural Mississippians, and that's Farm Bureau. Whether you have an acre of land and have a house, or you know, farm 10,000 acres of cotton or soybeans, we're looking out for larger interest of agriculture, larger interest of landowners. Y'all remember 2011, the private property rights, eminent domain initiative that Farm Bureau pushed and was successful in getting a change to the state constitution. That was Farm Bureau behind that, and that helps not only you and I, guys like us that work, but farmers, ranchers, and the random person that lives in town with a half acre lot, that helps everybody.
It's their lot.
It's their lot. It's their land. They don't want it taken away. So we're a great group, and I'm proud to say that we work for them.
Well, we appreciate the asset you are to our organization. Whether it's collecting information or us disseminating information through y'all, or just comparing notes on a particular issue that pops up during the course of the year. We really appreciate our working relationship with you and then with Farm Bureau too.
Thank you, Jason. We certainly value that. As I mentioned earlier, we value the strong relationship that Farm Bureau has with Mississippi State Extension.
Well, I agree. A lot of people don't understand the relationship we have, and you alluded to that earlier. But again, even within your membership, I don't know if everybody understands what y'all do on a daily basis in Washington for them. Yep. and how that works.
That's so right.
We thank you for everything y'all do, and we're glad to have you on.
Sure.
Thank you. Well, guys, we're going to jump off. We appreciate Justin spending some time with us this morning. And as always, if we can do anything for you, y'all just give us a call.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.